Chapter 14. The Poets' Club is meeting at Edwards. The expedition to the Bordello has been decided on. Otto Bambus hopes to achieve a blood transfusion for his verse. Hans Hungermann wants to gain inspiration for his Casanova, and for a free verse cycle to be called The Demon Woman. And even Matthias Grunt, the author of The Book of Death, thinks he can pick up a few racy details for the final delirium of a paranoiac. "Why don't you come along, Edward?" I ask. "I don't need to," he announces in a superior fashion. "I'm well taken care of as it is." "Really? Are you?" I know what he's trying to convey, and I know it is a lie.
"He sleeps with all the chambermaids in his hotel," Hungermann explains. "If they refuse, he dismisses them. He's a true friend of the people."
"Chambermaids, that's your style. Free verse, free love. Not I. Never in my own house. That's an old axiom."
"What about guests?"
"Guests?" Edward turns his eyes toward heaven. "There, of course, you often can't help yourself. The Countess von Bellarmine, for example."
"For example of what?" I ask as he falls silent. Edward demurs.
"The cavalier is discreet."
Hungermann is overcome by an attack of coughing.
"A fine discretion. How old is she? 80?
Edward smiles scornfully, but the next moment his smile drops from his face like a mask with a broken cord. Valentin Busch has entered. He, to be sure, is no man of letters, but nevertheless he has decided to come with us. He wants to be present when Otto Bambus loses his virginity.
"How goes it, Edward?" he asks. "Nice that you're still alive, eh? Otherwise you wouldn't have been able to enjoy that affair with the Countess."
"How do you know about it?" I ask in surprise.
"I overheard you outside in the hall. You're talking pretty loud. No doubt you've had quite a bit to drink. However, I do not begrudge Edward the Countess. I'm just happy that it was I who could rescue him for that."
"It was long before the war,"
Edward declares quickly. He sensed a new attack on his wine cellar.
"All right, all right," Valentin replies agreeably. "Since the war, you've no doubt had some fine experiences, too."
"In times like these?"
"Especially in times like these. When a person is desperate, he is more open to adventure. And countesses, princesses, and duchesses are especially desperate just now. Inflation, the Republic, no more imperial army. That's enough to break an aristocratic heart. How about a good bottle, Edward?"
"I haven't time just now,"
Edward replies with a presence of mind.
"Sorry, Valentin, but it won't do tonight. The club is making an expedition."
"Are you going along?" I ask.
"Of course, as treasurer. I have to, after all. Just didn't think of it a moment ago. Duty is duty."
I laugh. Valentin winks at me and says nothing about coming with us. Edward smiles because he thinks he has saved himself a bottle. Thus everything is in complete harmony. We get up and leave. It is a splendid evening. We are going to number 12, Bahnstrasse. The city has two cat houses, but the one in Bahnstrasse is the more elegant. Situated outside the city, it is a small house surrounded by poplar trees. I know it well. I spent part of my youth there without knowing what it was. On afternoons, when we had no school, we used to go out of the city to fish and look for salamanders in the streams and ponds and butterflies and beetles in the fields. On one particularly hot day, in search of an inn where we could get lemonade, we arrived at number 12 Bahnstrasse. The big tap room on the ground floor looked like any other tap room. It was cool, and when we asked for soft drinks, we got them. After a while, a number of women in morning gowns or flowery clothes came in, too. They asked us what we were doing and what class we were in at school. We paid for our drinks and came back again on the next hot day, this time with the books we had taken with us to study outdoors beside a stream. The kindly women were there again and took a motherly interest in us. We found the place cool and agreeable, and since no one but us was there in the afternoons, we stayed and began to do our lessons. The women looked over our shoulders and helped us as though they were our teachers.
They saw to it that we did our written exercises. They checked up on our marks. They listened to us recite what we had to learn by heart, and gave us chocolate when we were good, or on occasion, a gentle cuff on the ear when we were lazy. We thought nothing of it. We were still at that happy age when women mean nothing. After a short time, these ladies, smelling of violets and roses, assumed the roles of mother and teacher. They were very much interested in us, and the moment we appeared at the door, one of these goddesses was likely to ask excitedly, "How did the geography class go? All right?" At that time, my mother was in the hospital a great deal, and so it happened that I got part of my education in the Verdenbroek cat house, and I can only say that it was stricter than if I had got it at home. We went there for 2 summers, then we began to take long hikes, and so I had less time, and my family moved to another part of the city. After that, I was in Bonstrasse on one other occasion, during the war. It was the day before we were to go to the front. We were just 18, some of us not quite 18, and most of us had never been with a woman. But we didn't want to be shot without knowing something about it, and therefore we went, 5 in number, to Bonstrasse, which we already knew from that earlier time. Business was brisk there, and we were served with schnapps and beer. After we had drunk enough to feel courageous, we decided to make our bid for happiness. Willy, more enterprising than the rest of us, was the first. He stopped Fritzi, the most seductive of the ladies present.
"Darling, how about it?"
"Sure," Fritzi replied through the noise and smoke without really looking at him. "Have you the money?"
"More than enough."
Willy showed her his pay and the money his mother had given him to have a mass said for his safe return from the war.
"Well then, long live the fatherland,"
Fritzi said somewhat absently, looking in the direction of the beer bar.
"Come upstairs."
Willy got up and put his cap on the table. Fritzi stared at his fiery red hair. It was of a unique brilliance, and of course she recognized it at once, even after 7 years.
"Just a minute," she said. "Isn't your name Willy?"
"Absolutely," Willy declared, beaming.
"And didn't you used to do your schoolwork here?"
"Right."
"So, and now you want to come up to my room with me?"
"Of course. We already know each other." Willy was grinning all over. The next second he received a terrific blow on the ear.
"You pig," Fritzi said. "You want to come to bed with me? That's the limit."
"What do you mean?" Willy stammered.
All the others, what do they matter to me? Have I studied the catechism with them? Have I done their homework? Have I seen to it they didn't catch cold, you snot-nosed rascal?
But no, I'm 17 and a half.
Shut up. Why, it's like wanting to rape your mother. Out of here, you juvenile delinquent."
"He's going to war tomorrow," I said. "Have you no patriotism?" She looked me in the eyes.
"Aren't you the one who let the snakes loose? We had to shut the place up for 3 days while we searched for those reptiles."
"I didn't let them loose," I said in self-defense. "They got away from me." Before I could say any more, I too had been boxed on the ear.
"Lousy rascals, out with you."
The noise brought the madame in. Indignantly, Fritzi explained the situation to her. She too recognized Willy instantly.
"A redhead," she gasped.
She weighed 240 pounds and shook with laughter like a mountain of jelly in an earthquake.
"And you, isn't your name Ludwig?"
"Yes," Willy answered for me, "but we're soldiers now, and we have a right to sexual intercourse."
"So you have a right?" The madame heaved with renewed laughter. "Do you still remember, Fritzi, how scared he was that his father would find out he had thrown a stink bomb in Bible class? Now he has a right to sexual intercourse."
I couldn't see the humor of the situation. She was genuinely angry and offended.
"As though my own son."
The madame had to be held upright by 2 men. Tears streamed down her face. Bubbles of saliva formed at the corners of her mouth. She held her belly with both hands.
"Lemonade," she gasped. "Waldmeister lemonade. Wasn't that,"
coughing, gasping,
"your favorite drink?"
"We drink schnapps and beer now," I replied. "Everyone grows up sometime."
"Grows up? a renewed attack of gasping on the part of the madame, mad barking by her two bulldogs, which heard her and thought she was being attacked. We were through cautiously.
"Out, you thankless swine!"
the irreconcilable Fritzy screamed after us. "All right," Billy said at the door.
"Then we'll just have to go to Rollstrasse."
We stood outside in our uniforms with our deadly weapons and our stinging ears. But we did not get to Rollstrasse, the city's other cat house. It was a 2-hour walk all the way to the other side of Verdenbruck, and so we had ourselves shaved instead. This, too, was for the first time in our lives, and since we had no experience of intercourse, the difference did not seem as great to us as it would later on, especially since the barber insulted us, too, by recommending erasers for our beards. Later on, we met more of our friends and got pretty drunk and forgot the whole thing. So it came about that we marched into the field as virgins, and 17 of us fell without ever knowing what a woman is. Billy and I lost our virginity half a year later in an estaminet in Houthulst in Flanders. On that occasion, Billy got a dose, was taken to the field hospital, and thus escaped the Battle of Flanders, in which the 17 virgins fell. This proved, as we could see even at that time, that virtue is not always rewarded. We wander through the mild summer night. Otto Bambus sticks to me as the only one who admits to knowing the cat house. The others have been there too, but act innocent, and the only one who brags that he has been an almost daily guest there, the dramatist and author of the monograph Adam, Paul Schneeweis, is lying. He has never been there. Otto's hands are sweating. He expects priestesses of lust, bacchants, and demonic beasts of prey, and is not quite sure but that he will be driven back in Edward's opal car with his liver torn out, or at least without testicles. I comfort him. "People don't get mangled in a bordello more than once or twice a week at most, Otto, and the injuries are usually not too serious. Day before yesterday, Fritzy tore off a guest's ear, but so far as I know, you can have an ear sewn on again, or replaced by a very natural-looking celluloid one."
"An ear?"
Otto stops. "Of course there are ladies who don't tear them off," I reply, "but you'd hardly want to know them. What you want, after all, is the primeval woman in all her splendor."
"An ear is a pretty big sacrifice,"
Otto remarks, drying the lenses of his spectacles. "Poetry demands sacrifices. With an ear torn off, you would be in the truest sense a blood-drenched lyricist. Come along."
"Yes, but an ear, something that can be seen so easily."
"If I had my choice," Hans Hungermann says, "I would much rather have an ear torn off than be castrated, to speak frankly."
"What's that?"
Otto stops again.
"You're joking. That doesn't happen."
"It happens, all right," Hungermann declares. "Passion is capable of anything. But be calm, Otto. Castration is a punishable offense. The woman would get at least a couple of months in jail, and you would be avenged."
"Nonsense!"
Bambus stammers, smiling painfully.
"You're just making fun of me."
"Why should he make fun of you?" I say. "That would be mean. I recommend Fritzy to you for that very reason. She is an ear fetishist. Overcome by passion, she convulsively gets hold of her partner's ears with both hands, so you can be absolutely sure you won't be injured elsewhere. She doesn't have a third hand."
"But she still has 2 feet," Hungermann explains. "Sometimes they perform wonders with their feet. They let the nails grow and sharpen them."
"You're just pretending,"
Otto says in torment.
"Don't talk nonsense.
Listen to me," I reply. "I don't want you to be maimed. You would profit emotionally, but your soul would be impoverished and your poetry would suffer. I have here a pocket nail file, small, handy, and made for accomplished worldlings who must always be elegant. Take it. Keep it hidden in the palm of your hand, or slip it into the mattress before things start. If you see that it's getting too dangerous, a little harmless prick in Fritzy's derriere will be enough to do the trick. No blood need flow. Whenever anyone is bitten, even by a gnat, he lets go and reaches for the bite. That's one of the axioms of life. In the meantime, you'll escape."
I take out a red leather pocket case in which there are a comb and a nail file. It was a gift from the faithless Erna. The comb is made of artificial tortoise shell. A belated wave of rage rises in me as I take it out.
"Give me the comb, too," Otto says.
"You can't hack at her with a comb, you innocent satyr," Hungerman declares. "That's no weapon for the battle of the sexes. It will break on the convulsed flesh of the Maenad."
"I don't want to hack at her. I want to comb my hair afterward."
Hungerman and I look at each other. It seems that Bambus no longer believes us.
"Have you a first aid package with you?" Hungerman asks me.
"We don't need one. The madame has a whole apothecary shop." Bambus stops again.
"That's all nonsense.
But what about venereal disease?"
"This is Saturday. All the ladies were examined in the afternoon. No danger, Otto."
"You know everything, don't you?"
"We know what's necessary for life," Hungerman replies. "And usually that is something entirely different from what you learn in school and in the institutions of higher learning. That's why you're such a unique specimen, Otto."
"I was brought up too piously," Bambus sighs. "I grew up in fear of hell and of syphilis. With such a start, how can you turn into an earthy lyricist?"
"You might marry."
"That's my third complex, fear of marriage. My mother drove my father crazy, simply by weeping. Isn't that strange?"
"No," Hungerman and I say in unison and shake hands on it. "That means we'll have 7 more years to live. Good or ill, life is life. You only realize that when you have to risk it." Before we enter the cozy-looking house with its poplar trees, its red lanterns, and the blooming geraniums at the windows, we fortify ourselves with a few swallows of schnapps. We have brought a bottle with us and hand it round. Even Edward, who has driven ahead in his Opel and has been waiting, joins us. It isn't often he gets a free drink, and he enjoys it. The same drink that we are now having at a cost to ourselves of some 10,000 marks will be priced at 40,000 in the cat house. That's why we brought the bottle. Up to the doorsill we live economically. After that, we're at the mercy of Madame. At first, Otto is seriously disillusioned. He expected not a tap room, but an oriental setting with leopard skins, swinging lamps, and heavy perfume. Instead, the ladies, lightly clad, rather resemble servant maids. He asks me in a low voice whether there aren't any negresses or creoles. I point to a thin, black-haired creature. "That one over there has creole blood. She is just out of the penitentiary. Murdered her husband." Otto doubts it, but he brightens when the iron horse comes in. She makes an imposing picture in high laced boots, black underwear, a kind of lion tamer's uniform, a gray astrakhan cap, and a mouth full of gold teeth. Generations of young poets and editors have passed their examination in life on her, and she has been selected for Otto, too, by prearrangement. She or Fritzy. We have insisted that she appear in full regalia, and she has not disappointed us. She is taken aback when we introduce Otto. No doubt she expected to be handed something fresher and younger. Bambus looks as though he were made of paper, pale, thin, pimply, with a straggly mustache, and he is 26 years old. In addition, he is sweating at the moment like a salted horseradish. The iron horse bares her golden fangs in a good-humored grin and nudges the shuddering Bambus in the ribs.
"Come on, stand us a cognac," she says companionably. "What does a cognac cost?"
Otto asks the waitress.
60,000.
"What's that?" Hungerman asks in alarm. 40,000, not a pfennig more."
"Pfennig," says the madame. "That's a word I haven't heard in a long time." 40,000 was yesterday, my pet," the iron horse explains.
"It was 40,000 this morning. I was here this morning on behalf of the committee."
"What committee?"
"The Committee for the Rebirth of Poetry Through Personal Experience."
"My pet," says the iron horse, "that was before the dollar quotation."
"It was after the 11 o'clock exchange."
"It was before the afternoon one.
explains the madame.
Don't be such skinflints. 60,000
is based on the dollar exchange for day after tomorrow, I say.
On the 1-4 tomorrow. Every hour brings you nearer to it. Calm down. The dollar exchange is like death. You can't escape it. Isn't your name Ludwig?
Rolf, I reply firmly. Ludwig did not come back from the war. Hungerman is suddenly seized by a horrid suspicion.
And the tariff? He asks. How much is that? Our agreement was for 2 million. Undressing and a half hour's conversation afterward included. The conversation is important for our candidate.
3 million,
the Iron Horse replies phlegmatically. And that's cheap.
Comrades, we have been betrayed, Hungerman roars.
Do you know what you have to pay now for high boots that reach almost to your bottom? The Iron Horse asks.
2 million and not a centime more, when agreements are no longer respected even here. What's to become of the world?
Agreements? What are agreements when the exchange wobbles like a drunken man?
Matthias Grunt, who as author of the Book of Death has been appropriately silent until now, gets up.
This is the first cat house that has been undermined by National Socialism, he announces angrily. Treaties are scraps of paper, eh?
Treaties and money, the Iron Horse replies imperturbably. But high boots are high boots, and fancy black underwear is fancy black underwear. Madly expensive. Why don't you pick a cheaper class for your candidate for confirmation? The way they do with funerals. You can have them either with or without plumes. Second class is plenty good enough for him.
There's nothing to be said to that. The discussion has reached a dead end. Suddenly Hungerman discovers that Bambus has quietly downed both his own and the Iron Horse's cognac.
We're lost, he says. We'll have to pay what these Wall Street hyenas demand. You shouldn't have done that to us, Otto. Now we'll have to arrange your initiation into life in a simpler fashion, without plumes and with only a cast iron horse.
Fortunately, at this moment, Willy comes in. He is full of curiosity about Otto's transformation into a man, and he pays the difference without the quiver of an eyelash. Then he orders schnapps for all of us and announces that he has made 25 million today on his stocks. He intends to drink up part of it.
Off with you, boy, he says to Otto, and come back a man.
Otto disappears upstairs. I sit down beside Fritzi. The old quarrel has been long since forgotten. Since her son was killed in the war, she no longer regards us as half-children. He was a non-com and was shot 3 days before the armistice. We talk about the times before the war. She tells me her son studied music in Leipzig. He wanted to be an oboe player. Beside us, the huge madame is sleeping, a bulldog on her knees. Suddenly a scream resounds from upstairs. Uproar follows, and then Otto appears in his underdrawers, followed by the furious Iron Horse, who is beating him over the head with a tin washbasin. Otto has good running form. He races through the front door, and three of us stop the Iron Horse.
That damned half-portion, she wheezes. He went to work on me with a knife.
It wasn't a knife, I say, realizing what has happened.
What do you mean?
The Iron Horse turns around and points to a red spot above her black underwear.
It's not bleeding. It was only a nail file. A nail file?
The horse stares at me.
That's a new one on me. And that beggar prince pricks me instead of me pricking him? Don't my boots mean anything? And my collection of whips? I wanted to be decent to him and give him a little taste of sadism as a bonus. Just a playful slap across his skinny shanks with a whip, and the deceitful spectacled snake went to work on me with a pocket nail file. A sadist. Do I need a sadist? I, the dream girl of the masochists? What an insult.
We quiet her down with a double kummel. Then we go to look for Bambus. He is standing behind a lilac bush, feeling his head.
Come along, Otto. The danger is past, Hungerman calls.
Bambus refuses. He asks us to throw his clothes to him.
Absolutely not, Hungerman declares. 3 million are 3 million. We have paid for you.
Ask for the money back. I won't let myself be cut to pieces.
A cavalier never asks a lady to return money. And we're going to make you into a cavalier if we have to smash your head doing it.
The whip was just an act of friendship. The iron horse is a sadist. What?
A rigorous masseuse. We just forgot to tell you. But you should be happy to have had an experience of that kind. It's rare in small cities.
I'm not happy. Throw my things out here.
We succeed in luring him in again after he is dressed behind the lilac bush. We give him a drink, but we cannot get him to leave the table. He maintains that the mood is gone. Finally, Hungerman reaches an agreement with the iron horse and the madame. Bambus is to have the right to return within a week, without additional payment. We go on drinking. After a while, I notice that Otto seems to have caught fire despite everything. He keeps glancing across at the iron horse and pays no attention to the other ladies. Willy orders more kummel. After a while, we miss Eduard. He appears a half hour later sweating, saying that he has been for a walk. The kummel gradually produces its effect. Suddenly, Otto Bambus gets out paper and pencil and begins secretly making notes. I look over his shoulder. The title is The Tigress.
Hadn't you better wait a while with your free verse? I ask.
He shakes his head.
The first impression is the most important.
But after all, you've only had one slash across your bottom with a whip and then a couple of bangs on the head with a wash basin. What's tigerish about that?
Just leave it to me.
Bambus pours another kummel through his straggly mustache.
That's where the power of imagination comes in. I am already blooming with verses like a rosebush. What am I saying? Like an orchid in the jungle.
Do you think you've had enough experience? Otto shoots a look full of lust and dread in the direction of the iron horse.
I don't know, but certainly enough for a small volume in boards.
Speak up. 3 million has been paid out for you. If you don't need it, let's drink it up.
Let's drink it up.
Bambus tosses down another kummel. It is the first time we've seen him like this. He has shunned alcohol like the pest, especially schnapps. His poetry thrived on coffee and elderberry wine.
What do you make of that? I ask Hungerman.
It was the blows on the head with the wash basin.
It was nothing at all,
Otto howls. He has downed another double kummel and pinches the iron horse on the bottom as she goes by. The horse stops as though struck by lightning. Then she turns around slowly and examines Otto as though he were some rare insect. We stretch out our arms to protect him from the expected blow. For ladies in high boots, a pinch of this sort is an obscene insult. Otto gets up wavering, smiles absently out of nearsighted eyes, walks around the horse, and unexpectedly lands a hearty blow on the black underwear. Silence falls. Everyone expects murder. But Otto seats himself again unconcernedly, lays his head on his arms, and goes to sleep instantly.
Never kill a sleeping man,
Hungerman beseeches the horse.
The 11th commandment.
The iron horse opens her mighty mouth in a silent grin. All her gold plumbing glitters. Then she strokes Otto's thin, soft hair.
Children and brothers, she says, to be so young and so silly again.
We leave. Eduard drives Hungerman and Bambus back to the city. The poplars rustle, the bulldogs bark. The iron horse stands in the second-story window and waves at us with her Cossack cap. Behind the cat house stands a pale moon. Matthias Grunt, the poet of the Book of Death, clambers out of a ditch. He thought he could cross it like Christ crossing the Sea of Gennesaret. It was a mistake. Willy is walking beside me.
What a life, he says dreamily. And to think you actually make money in your sleep. Tomorrow the dollar will be even higher, and my shares will be climbing up after it like agile little monkeys.
Don't spoil the evening for me. Where's your car? Is it having puppies like your shares?
Rene has it. It looks well in front of the Red Mill. She takes her colleagues driving between performances. They burst with envy.
Are you going to marry her?
We're engaged, Billy explains. If you know what that means.
I can imagine.
It's funny, Billy says. Nowadays, she often reminds me very much of Lieutenant Hulla, that damn slave driver who made life so miserable for us in preparation for a hero's death. Exactly the same, in the dark. It's a scary and refined sort of pleasure to have Hella on the back of his neck defiling him. I'd never have guessed I would get fun out of something like that. You can believe me.
I believe you. We walk through the dark, gloomy gardens. The scent of unrecognized flowers is borne to us.
How sweet the moonlight sleeps upon this bank, someone says, rising like a ghost from the ground. It is Hungerman. He is as wet as Matthias Grunt.
What's going on? I ask. It hasn't been raining here.
Eduard put us out. We sang too loud for him, the respectable hotel keeper. Then, when I tried to refresh Otto, we both fell into the brook.
You too? Where is Otto? Looking for Matthias Grunt?
He's fishing.
What?
Damn it, says Hungerman. I just hope he hasn't fallen in. He can't swim.
Nonsense. The brook is only a yard deep.
Otto could drown in a puddle. He loves his native land.
We find Bambus clinging to a bridge over the brook and preaching to the fishes.
Are you ill, St. Francis?
Hungerman asks.
Yes, indeed,
Bambus replies, giggling as though that were madly funny. Then his teeth begin to chatter.
Cold,
he stammers.
I'm no open air man.
Billy gets a bottle of Kummel out of his pocket.
Who's rescuing you again? Uncle Billy, the provider, rescuing you from inflammation of the lungs and cold death.
Too bad Eduard isn't here, Hungerman says.
Then you could rescue him, too, and found a society with Valentine Busch, Eduard's rescuers. That would kill him.
Spare us your bad jokes, says Valentine, who has been standing behind him. Capital should be sacred to you, or are you a communist? I will divide mine with no one. Eduard belongs to me. We all have a drink. The Kummel sparkles in the moonlight like a yellow diamond. Are you going somewhere else? I ask Billy.
To Bodo Lederhose's singing club. Come along. All three of you can dry out there.
Splendid,
Hungerman says. It occurs to no one that it would be simpler to go home, not even to the poet of death. Tonight liquids seem to have an irresistible attraction. We walk on beside the brook. The moon shimmers on its surface. You can drink it. Who was it who said that once? And where? And when?